laughed a little. Who knew my dating life was the topic of everyone's fascination, including Elodie's? What was it about dating that measured a woman's value in life? Ugh, she groaned, throwing a pillow at me. You're killing me. You're killing me. On top of that, you said your baby shower totally sucked and everyone was drunk, so I definitely wouldn't take Tony's advice on anything life-related. Elodie laughed as I tossed the pillow back at her, but was quiet for a few moments before she spoke again. People are supposed to be connected to each other, don't you think? She asked the question backward, the way she did with some sentences. She clearly felt some way about my dating life, even though I had assumed she was too busy to even be paying attention. What do you mean? I just had to ask against my better judgment. Well, people are supposed to be in love. That's what we're made for. Quite literally. She smiled. It makes us feel good to have someone to share with. I'm not just talking about men. I mean friends, family. Just people in general. It makes me worry for you that you don't have anyone like that. You said yourself that I'm your closest friend and you barely tell me anything about your life. Your brother is leaving and he said, my brother? I cut her off, shocked that she even knew this. So your friends and my brother and you all just sit around and talk about me? Elodie shook her head. No. Well, it seems like it. Not everyone is comfortable with everyone else knowing about their personal life. I hit one hand against the pillow on the chair to make it stand up better. Admittedly, a little harder than necessary. Not everyone is the same or wants the same things. I have a lot of shit going on, and the last thing I need is to be connected to someone. I'm connected to enough people who cause enough problems in my life, so you, my brother, those women, and Kale can all stop worrying about me before I completely lose it. I need to worry about myself and myself only right now. Truth was, I had never been a person who needed to be surrounded by friends or to date. Kale was an exception, but I was never the one to make the plans with the few friends I had throughout my life. When I looked at Elodie, her brows were slumped, her full lips pouting. She was genuinely sad for me. I could feel it. But that didn't mean I was going to agree with her just for the sake of her pout disappearing. Just be happy, Corina, okay? I will be. I didn't know when that would be, but it had to be someday, right? I wiped a bead of sweat off my forehead with my forearm. I needed to shower, and today was hair washing day. I was on day 4 of dry shampoo, and I was so glad to have a convenient way to get out of that conversation with Elodie. I need to jump in the shower. I'm tired and sweaty. She sighed and turned to face me, adorably lifting her shoulder to hide her weak smile, still a little upset. I nodded and headed to the hallway with my phone in my hand. As I reached the bathroom door, I turned to Elodie, who was still looking at me. Her voice rang out through the hallway, and she kept her eyes on her hands resting in her lap. By the way, we are going camping tomorrow. I already told everyone you would come, and it's for your birthday and Austin's, and it's Austin's last time with his friends and all of us together, so please don't fight me on it and just agree. Elodie sounded like a deflated balloon by the time her speech was done. I was so tired of hearing about this damn camping trip. I'm not going. I shut the door behind me, but could still hear her as she yelled, Yes, you are. I sank against the door and my body felt heavier than ever. I knew I had lost the camping battle, and it wasn't even worth arguing over. Chapter 22. The morning had come. I felt the sun peering into my window to mock me, heat rising up my chest and on my bare thighs. My fan broke last night because of course it did. I opened my eyes slowly, covering them with my arm as a way to block the burning light that was forcing me to get up. It had finally arrived. The Friday of the inevitable peer pressure-fueled excursion where I would either be completely miserable and anxious or I would... Well, I couldn't see any other option when it came to being forced to be social with a group of Kale's and my brother's friends. Out in the woods of Georgia, of all places. I checked my phone. Only one text from Austin, a group chat that I hadn't volunteered to be a part of. Everyone else seemed to be excited. A lot of beer and tent emojis, along with a few flames, covered my screen. I rolled my eyes and lifted my heavy body out of bed. I could hear Elodie in the kitchen speaking in her native tongue, presumably to her parents. My duffel bag sat on the floor, ready to go. I had packed in a rush last night and wondered whether I should start over. Had I packed enough clothes? Toiletries? Dignity? Confidence? The last two were a for sure no, but I was determined to go through with this. It was important to my brother and Elodie, and it was just a few days after all. Miraculously, it happened to fall on the week when Molly's daughter was due to give birth, so neither Elodie nor I had to worry about work, which was my first and last excuse. Elodie's doctor told her she was more than fine to go camping, but to make sure she wasn't too close to smoke and stayed away from alcohol, which seemed obvious, but apparently some people needed to be reminded, even while pregnant. I opened my dresser, grabbed one more t-shirt, rolled it up, and tossed it in. Even though I would be in the thick Georgia woods and was by no means planning to dress up, I wanted to be somewhat cute. I hoped that at least one of Kale's friends would tell him that I looked good, even in the woods with no makeup on. I was trying not to make this whole thing about him, but ever since I'd seen him, I'd even go so far as to say I felt at ease with him. It was jarring. And even though Kale wouldn't be joining the group, I wanted to stay fresh in his mind. I checked my phone one last time before going to the shower. My plan was to blow dry and style my hair today and hope it would last with a little help from dry shampoo over the next 3 days. Humidity would surely kill my plan, but I was determined to try. When I got out of the shower, Elodie was standing by the front door, dressed and bending down to put her sneakers on. "I'm going to run a few errands. Tony asked me to get some things for the trip," she told me, grabbing her keychain from one of the hooks on the wall. "I'll go with you," I offered. My hair was done, and I had the time, since I was packed and ready anyway. It annoyed me that Tony had asked the only pregnant person going to get things last minute for the trip, but I was trying to give her the benefit of the doubt, because she had a billion kids and was probably stressed and packing last minute herself. "Actually, Austin is coming over to go with me. He'll be here soon." Elodie's eyes left mine like she was nervous. "Oh." I paused. "Ice and things are needed. All heavy things, so I need his help." "Okay, well, that's probably better anyway. I'll be here when you guys get back, so if one of you can text me, I'll just come outside. Are you all packed?" She nodded, and she pulled her bottom lip between her teeth.
Actually, Karina, we will use my car for the cooler, so last night in the group chats, we all decided who will ride with who."
The fucking group chat. Of course, I'd muted it and hadn't read a single message as too many to count came in. "Really? So, who am I riding with?"
My heart began to race immediately.
I didn't know anyone except Gloria and Mendoza.
"I think the Mendozas. Is that okay?
I'm sorry my car is so small. If you want to drive yourself, you can, but you said you needed an oil change, and since you didn't reply, I said Mendozas would be best." I nodded.
"Yeah, that's good, actually."
I wasn't 100% comfortable with them either, but I didn't want to risk driving my car alone for hours to an unknown campground when the engine light and oil light were both on. My motto for the weekend was supposed to be, go with the flow, but it seemed like it was going to be harder to do that with each minute that passed. A little voice in my head reminded me that maybe, just maybe, I could get more background on Kale from his closest friends. I knew it wouldn't change anything, but it would satisfy my curiosity and masochistic tendencies. I wasn't even sure what I was looking for anyway.
"It will be fun, I promise."
Elodie smiled, making her best effort to convince me. I nodded and shooed her out the door.
I was already committed to going, so I didn't want to talk about it anymore. After she pulled out of the driveway, I wondered how I was supposed to know what time the Mendozas would be there to pick me up. I wasn't someone who thrived with zero plans. I cursed at my ceiling as I sat down on the couch and opened the group chat. There were too many messages to scroll all the way back, so I scanned for a pickup time but didn't see anything. I decided to wait a bit, and if they hadn't shown up, I would text and just ask. I finished getting myself ready, a tiny bit of tinted moisturizer and a few dots of concealer along my cheeks. I didn't want my breakout to get worse, but wanted to look as fresh as I could manage, at least the first day. I sat my packed duffel by the door and scrolled through my phone. My Instagram account was still picking up steam since I'd posted at the flea market. Even my random photos from months ago, a blurry one of the tree in front of my dad's house, an orange night sky and traffic with headlights that looked like fireworks speckled across the small image, were getting a lot of comments and likes. About 50-ish each, which was a lot compared to the 3 or 4 here and there that I was used to. I didn't understand it, but a little rush crept in with each comment complimenting my photos. I was glad I only had a couple posts of myself, mostly blurry or with an object covering my face. One, a bouquet of flowers. One, a plate full of waffles from a brunch with Elodie almost a year ago. I was far from confident enough to post selfie after selfie like most of the women I followed. I admired and envied their confidence, even if it was just what the algorithm wanted me to see. I scrolled through the likes on the waffle photo out of pure curiosity and almost dropped my phone as I brought it right up to my face to make sure I wasn't seeing things. Kale had liked the picture. I clicked on his profile and it was private. The last time I checked was around the time we first met and he didn't have an account. His profile seemed rather new, only 3 followers, and he was following 0. I couldn't see the followers since he was on private, but it made me feel uneasy that he had an account now. I wasn't sure why. Maybe I didn't want him to have access to the thousands of women on the app. And since Elodie told me that people were now dating people they met on the app, what if that was his reason for making the account? The thought made my stomach turn, and I wrapped my arm around my torso as if I could hold myself together. It had been about 20 minutes since Elodie left, so I texted to ask if she had any idea when the Mendozas would be coming to get me. I was ready to go. My anxiety was creeping in, and I was beginning to get intrusive thoughts like, what if this whole thing is some kind of setup, and Kale will actually be there? Maybe even worse, with another woman. What if someone gets too drunk and starts a fight that turns into more? What if? Elodie's response popped up on my screen at the exact moment that I heard the noise. That familiar engine rumble that I had grown so used to. I longed for it. I hated it. I jumped up to my knees and peered out the front window. Kale's truck was pulling up, stopping in its usual spot in front of my house. I rushed to the mirror on the wall while quietly cursing at myself for doing it, though I couldn't seem to control the impulse. My mind began to race as I heard his truck shut off. I pushed my ear against the door, hearing the car door close. What the hell was he doing here? Austin wasn't here, Elodie wasn't here. As Kale got closer, I took a few deep breaths. The knock at the door startled me, even though I knew he was there. I opened it quickly, too quickly, as if I had been waiting at the door, which I had, but he didn't need to know that. He was dressed in joggers, as always, form-fitting at the top and down his thighs, bunched around his ankles, showing white socks to match his always white sneakers, and a black t-shirt hung lower than the white hoodie he wore on top. His skin was glowing, flawless and freshly shaved. Same with his head. He looked so much like a cool, unbothered guy from a Gap or Nike advertisement. I both enjoyed and resented the view. His body language was somewhat awkward as he stood at the bottom of my porch, but he still had his head high, confidence thick in his shoulders. In the bright sky behind him, the clouds were thick. It was about 75 degrees, but the air had a hint of a chill to it, making me think I might need more than the thin cotton long-sleeved shirt and jeans I was wearing. I needed to grab a hoodie before I left. I tried my damnedest to be patient as I waited for him to tell me what he was doing here, but it lasted merely a few seconds. My brother and Elodie are both out. They left to go to the campground. They had to pick up some stuff on the way, so Mendoza... Well, the Mendozas are coming to get me any time. He shuffled his sneaker against the overgrown grass on the edges of my sidewalk.
Actually, I'm here to get you.
What do you... What? I held on to the doorknob to steady myself.
Yeah. I'm supposed to drive you. A few guys ended up showing up at their place. Apparently there was some miscommunication in some group text chat you all have. But I was the one with the least amount of bodies in my car, so here I am.
Cale raised his arms in the air at his sides like he was saying, "Sorry, I don't want to drive with you either, but we don't have a choice." "I thought you weren't coming," I said, puzzled, wondering when the hell that very important detail changed. He half smiled, but it wasn't a kind or teasing one. It was uncomfortable.
"Yeah, well, I also thought you weren't coming,"
I gasped sarcastically. "Great." He held up his hands in front of his body.
"I meant I didn't know you were coming. I don't have a problem with it, and I'm not saying I didn't want you to come. I just didn't know. If you're uncomfortable with me going, I can still dip out. I didn't mean to stress you out or ruin your weekend if you thought you wouldn't have to see me."
I had two options here. Well, three. One, I could cancel altogether and have my house to myself for 3 days, with zero chance of Austin or anyone else stopping by. Two, I could go but tell Cale to stay back since he'd offered anyway. Whether or not it had been a genuine offer wasn't my problem. Three, I could just go and try as hard as possible to keep my distance from him. This would be the worst option for me and probably for him, but better for the group. No drama, no one left out. "It's fine," I said, deciding to lie. To try my best to act like I didn't care if he was coming or that I had to spend 2 hours in the car with him alone. "I don't want to make you uncomfortable either. Are you good with me going? They're your friends, after all." Cale nodded before he spoke.
"Nah, it's cool with me. I don't think we should let our... I don't know what this is anymore."
His hand waved between us.
"Whatever it is, it shouldn't get in the way of everyone's weekend. We got along fine at the market. Well, after you laid into me a bit."
He was lucky that he smiled right away, because our interaction at the market was far from me laying into him the way I had planned to and thought I wanted to. I was being nice. I matched my fake smile to his and watched his face light up as he laughed. The sound still gave me instant butterflies, but it felt a lot nicer than the hole I'd felt lately. I laughed with him, knowing this whole weekend could turn into a disaster at any point.
"Right. Well, I appreciate it."
We were bantering, borderline flirting, and I felt my feet slipping near a very dangerous edge with him. I didn't want to be manipulated by my attraction or connection to him, but standing there in the doorway, I felt the same sense of comfort I always had with him. If we could just erase... "No, no, no," I repeated in my head. "I'm ready when you are," I told him, turning my back to go inside to grab my bag. I heard the door creak, and when I looked up, he was standing next to me in the living room, arm out, expecting my bag. "I can carry it."
"I know,"
he said, gently grabbing it from me before I could sling the straps on my shoulders. It was a bit heavy because of my few books, my clothes, and boots. It was nothing for Cale, of course, who could lift me up and put me over his shoulder with zero trouble. The thought made my cheeks hot, so I looked away from him. "Let's go?" I asked, surveying the living room to make sure I wasn't forgetting anything. Kale walked past me. Where the heck was he going? I followed him to the kitchen and across it to the back door. He locked both locks. The top one made a rusty sound as Kale gave me a look that was clear as day. I was going to lock that. My white lie came out defensively.
I know you sometimes forget. I wasn't trying to step on your toes. Just habit, I guess.
Truth was, I had totally forgotten about the back door, and if he hadn't checked it, it would have stayed open the entire time I was gone. Kale's soldier mentality came in handy quite often. There was a time when things were good between us when I stopped having to worry about my surroundings. When he was with me, I knew he would always open doors, walk on the outside when we walked together on a sidewalk, check my seatbelt, and make sure the doors were locked, my phone alarm was set to wake up for work, and the oven was turned off after making dinner. The small things that dramatically improved my mental clarity and day overall. He made things so easy. Until the day he made them unbearable by taking away the comfort and security I had yearned for my entire life. In just a few minutes' time, it was all undone. Can we go now? I was growing angry over things I couldn't change, and I didn't want it to affect the drive. There was already enough tension between us. He nodded, looked around the kitchen, and asked me if the lights were all off. I ignored him, and he flicked on the porch light just as we exited the house and made our way to his truck. He put my bag in the trunk and slammed it shut. I wasn't sure if I should get in the back seat or the front, but he walked up and opened the passenger seat door. It wasn't an Uber, after all. I buckled in, and he asked if I wanted to plug my phone in for music. I shook my head. He didn't need to hear all the breakup sad bops, as Spotify called it, playlists I'd been blaring lately. We drove in silence for a few minutes. He turned the AC on too high, but I was too uneasy to say anything, so I pulled my sleeves down to cover my hands. Of course, I'd forgotten the damn second hoodie.
We're picking up one more soldier on our way. Somehow I became the taxi. She lives close by, so it won't take long.
She? I blurted out, my chest instantly aflame. I tried not to look over at Kale, but did anyway. His hand rubbed over his chin like answering was going to be painful. To him or me, I wondered.
Yeah, Turner. You've met her a couple times now.
Turner? The one from the mall? He nodded. I wanted to slam my head against the hard glass of the window.
Really? Yeah.
I took a deep breath, trying to remain calm and not overreact. Whose bright idea was it to have me and a woman who clearly liked him, or at least was attracted to him, ride together? The thoughts I labeled as intrusive earlier came rushing back. This had to be a setup. Someone in this group absolutely was getting off on making this as hard for me as possible. My mind split into two parts, one that believed this whole trip was a massive setup, and one that kept telling me that was ludicrous, that no one on this trip was even bothered enough by me or thought enough about me, even in a malicious way, to notice or care that this pairing would make me feel miserable. According to text-filled posts on Instagram, I was both a self-sabotaging, insecure avoidant and a massive narcissist who assumed everything and everyone was considering and plotting around me when they weren't. Self-diagnosing was easier now because of random unqualified people posting their, if you do these three things, your A, B, or C lists.
She was supposed to ride with the Mendozas too,
Kale finally said. I put my knees up, my dirty shoes on his seat, and nodded. I didn't say another word as we drove to pick up the woman whom Kale had known longer than me, who was prettier than me, and who hadn't had her heart torn apart by him, the way I had.
Chapter 23. Kale. I've met many women in my life. From married 18-year-olds who were too young and too lonely to be expected to make logical choices, to girls I went to high school with who wanted to do more with their lives but ultimately couldn't get out of their situations due to lack of resources or support from their family. Sometimes both. I've met women at bars whose eye contact and shiny lip gloss made my cock hard, but after 2 minutes of hearing them speak, their minds made me excuse myself to the bathroom and never come back. I've met widows who cry at the mention of their dead husbands' names and drown themselves in cheap vodka because the pain is too heavy. I've known strong women like my ma who would do anything, literally anything, under the goddamn sun for me and my sister. I've talked to women born and raised in Afghanistan who, despite their country being blown apart day by day, still had a hope for a better future for their daughters. In a way, sometimes I felt like I was living a double life, one raised by a hard-ass, rock but gentle woman, and now one full of rowdy men who don't talk about their struggles or hardships. Out of all the people I'd met, I'd usually found them easy to handle and simple to empathize with, read and understand, except Karina. I couldn't for the fucking life of me understand what she was thinking inside that thick skull of hers, and I never knew what she was going to do or say next. She had told me since we met that she was predictable, boring, and that her life was small. Yet there was nothing routine about that woman. She was headstrong, but so sensitive. Her sense of self was both bold and fragile. I wasn't happy about the current situation either, driving with both Karina and Turner. I knew the tension would be thick. Karina handed me her ID as we pulled up to the main gate of Benning, which was the one closest to Turner's barracks. She didn't say anything, but I heard her sigh as she slid the card into my palm. The moment I pulled up to Turner's barracks, Karina got out of the front seat and moved to the back before I could even ask why. I could tell she didn't like Turner, and this whole driving them both thing had been really bad judgment on my part. Now that Karina was sitting in the back of my truck on our way to a 3-day camping trip, there would be no escaping her or how badly I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to ask her how work has been, how she's been, if she's been going to her dad's house, why she dyed her hair again. Even if she got on my nerves like no one ever had, I couldn't help that she made me feel alive and interested in something, someone, for the first time since I'd left the battlefield. Turner waved as we pulled up, bouncing down the grass and pavement and approaching the truck. I could tell she was also surprised to see Karina in my back seat, but even so, she smiled brightly at both of us. "I'm so glad there are more women going on this trip," Turner said to Karina as she threw her camel duffel into my trunk. I stayed seated, not wanting Karina to get the wrong idea if I helped Turner with her bag the same way I'd helped her. Karina smiled, nodding to be polite. The music was interrupted again by the sound of Turner's phone ringing. I regretted giving her control over the music instantly, but her phone ringing every few minutes when I was already on edge was not helping. Karina was staring out the window, lost in the maze that was her brain. I wondered if she was upset that I'd let Turner play DJ. But in my mind, she had no right to be, since I'd asked her first, and she'd said no. We must have been 20 minutes into the drive, 4 or 5 songs along and a playlist from the early 2000s. As Turner sang along to Irreplaceable by Beyonce, Karina continued her silent streak. I wished I could go back to 2 hours ago when Gloria called me to ask if I could drive the two women. I should have found Turner another ride. I knew, if it were just me and Karina in the car, she wouldn't have been able to keep herself from talking, and I'd much rather be listening to her voice than Turner's off-key singing into a nearly empty water bottle. Turner was dressed in a tight shirt that hung just above her waist, showing off the honey skin on her stomach, and even tighter jeans with holes cut all over them. If it weren't for the thick flannel over her, she would freeze during the night. Outside of work, she liked to dress as feminine as she could, since she spent over half her time in a baggy uniform. I tried to just focus on the empty highway ahead of me, but Turner's voice and phone ringing kept distracting me in an irritating way. "You can answer that if you need to," I finally told her after the third time the same name popped up on my dashboard screen.
"Nah, he'll just think I want him more. You know how men can be when they're not ready to give up. Or do you think me ignoring him will just encourage him?" she said with a sigh.
"Actually, I have no idea, really. I replied after she stared at me expectantly.
Right, because it's always you who is getting chased.
She pointed a finger at me and shook her head. Her hoop earrings dangled. Turner's cropped black shirt was so low cut that her bra was peeking out on both sides, and I could feel how uncomfortable her tight jeans must have been just by looking at them. Her shoes were black and had some kind of metal balls on them, while Karina's dirty white Air Forces and baggy jeans made much more sense. They were quite the contrast to one another. Karina's hair was now in one of those clip things that looked like teeth, and she wore a simple long-sleeved shirt. I couldn't help but notice that the cotton of Karina's shirt was rather see-through, and I didn't like the idea of men at the campground being able to see the outline of her body, her bra, the deep curves of her waist. I knew they would all look. I couldn't blame them, even though it made me want to strangle them before it even happened. Why was I even comparing them?
I'm bored. Tell me about your most recent ex,
Turner asked me from the passenger seat.
Mine?
Nervously, I looked in the rear view to see Karina's reaction, but her face was set in stone. She met my eyes for the tiniest of a second, and then looked out the window again. It annoyed me that she was sitting in the back, but she made it clear she didn't want to ride shotgun by the way she yanked open the back door handle of my truck before we fully decided who would sit where.
Yeah, well, yours too,
she nodded toward Karina.
Dating these days is so freaking hard, you know? No pressure if you don't want to tell me, though.
She turned her body to Karina as she spoke. I was going to tell Turner to leave Karina alone, that she wasn't the kind of person who wanted to share her personal life with a random girl she barely knew or liked. But before I could, Karina's brows raised and she shifted in her seat.
Actually, I'm fine sharing.
I was surprised by her response, but certainly ready to hear it. I arrogantly assumed she would talk about me, especially since Turner had run into us more than once now. So I was pretty shocked when she said the name Brian. I unplugged Turner's phone from my cord to turn the music off. Yanked would be a more accurate description.
We dated on and off for a little bit. We weren't as serious as I thought we were, and looking back, it was such a juvenile relationship that it's almost embarrassing.
She laughed, a soft and sarcastic one, but she laughed. Turner was smiling warmly, clearly very interested in Karina's love life.
When did y'all break up? Did you end it or him?
Karina's expression in the mirror told me that she already regretted engaging in girl talk with Turner. Since Turner didn't know her well enough to tell, she believed Karina's faux interested smile. Her voice was soft and thoughtful.
I broke up with him the last time. He cheated on me, and I still dated him after that. More like hooking up, I guess. But eventually I realized there wasn't a single thing about him that I actually enjoyed. I created a person in my head who I wanted him to be, but it became too unrealistic of an expectation, and eventually I had to stop. That's a bad habit of mine, creating good personas for people who don't deserve it.
That felt like a blow specifically for me. And Karina talking about hooking up with someone, especially that shitbag Brian, made me want to drive my truck off the side of the road.
Wow. Yeah, I know what you mean by being attracted to the idea of someone. This guy Reed, the one who keeps calling, is my most recent ex, and God, he's in victim mode right now. But he did the opposite of your situation and just pretended to be whoever he thought I wanted him to be. While he was actively on Tinder and in many girls' DMs on Insta and Facebook.
Turner talked so fast that it was a bit hard to keep up with her, but Karina had leaned up closer to the front seats and seemed to genuinely enjoy the venting session.
But the lies became too much and I couldn't stand it. I wouldn't have been that pissed if he had told me he didn't want to be exclusive. I fucking hate liars more than anything. Like, how hard is it to be honest? Of course, now I'm the bad guy, even though he's the one who lied over and over. Lying is just something I can't forgive, and I can forgive a lot.
If I heard the word lie one more time, I would jump out of the moving truck. Karina made a noise and nodded in agreement.
Yeah, it's hard when you trust someone, not to mention the loneliness you feel after getting used to the comfort of that person. I can promise you I'll never do that again. Being alone is 1,000,000% better than being lied to and cheated on, Turner said, rolling her eyes.
Yeah, I suppose so, Karina agreed. There are a lot worse things than being lonely.
The rest of the drive was full of Turner talking randomly, and Karina sitting mostly quiet in the back. Turner plugged her phone back into my radio, and every once in a while, she would turn the volume up painfully loud and sing along again. No matter what song was playing, I couldn't stop replaying what Karina had said about Brian. How could she say he was her most recent ex, and right in front of me? When we stopped for gas, she didn't even look at me as she climbed out the back of my truck. She and Turner surprisingly seemed to become fast friends as they locked arms and went inside the gas station to pee. I knew she was still really pissed at me and probably wished we had never met. But her denial was ironic. The topic had turned to lying, but she lied to Turner and basically denied ever being with me. When they returned, Karina held a yellow bag of peanut M&Ms in one hand and a bottle of water in the other. She also had a small plastic bag of additional snacks hanging from her wrist, and when I began to drive, she silently put a blue Gatorade and a pack of Starburst in my cup holders. She knew from before, during our not dating period, that I loved them, and it made me soften a little to know that despite her not wanting anything to do with me, she took the time to grab me these things. Turner didn't seem to notice and was guzzling a bottle of Coca-Cola, singing along to a Jonas Brothers song. Her music taste was all over the place. Another thing she and Karina had in common. The small sign to enter the campground was so covered by overgrown brush and unruly bushes that if I hadn't been following my navigation, I would have missed the small dirt road. The dark green trees were tall and hardly any of the setting sun could pass through their branches. The woods were thick, and the smell of fall was in the air as Karina rolled down the back window and stuck her head out. I continued to drive slowly but kept stealing glances at her carefree, relaxed expression in the side mirror. There wasn't a paved road in sight now, and the dirt under my tires formed a cloud of dust behind us, even though I was driving less than 20 miles an hour. We passed a couple rows of small, empty wooden cabins with not a single car parked by any of them. The place looked nearly abandoned. I wondered if Karina would feel uneasy with the slightly horror film vibe of the place, but when I looked at her again, her face was tilted toward the massive trees, and she smiled softly. She rolled her window halfway back up, I guess to keep some of the dirt out, but she seemed unfazed. Turner was humming, scrolling on her phone. "Who chose this place? It looks like shit," she commented as we slowed down to pass a man stepping out of an RV. He was shirtless and holding a beer bottle. The setup around his old, rusted RV made me think he was living there, with folding chairs and a table, trash, a grill, and an American flag dangling from the awning. I would bet my life that he was a vet. I could easily spot one. One wounded fucker to another. As we got closer, he waved at us, and I nodded back as we passed by. I could see he was wearing a black POW hat. I was right about him. I hoped living out here was a choice, and not because it was his only option. I shook my head to clear my thoughts. I had enough of my own shit to worry about, and he wasn't my problem. I wouldn't end up like him. There it was, the lingering fear of being one of the thousands of homeless veterans across the U.S. My obsession with saving my money and owning property stemmed from the statistics and my own fear of ending up that way. Owning a piece of land in this country was the only way to ensure freedom. The government could take our bodies and alter our minds. A greedy apartment building owner could increase our rent, sell the building, and kick us out. But no one could take away a paid-off home or piece of land. Karina knew that too, and that's why she held her home so close to her heart. It was one of the first things I realized we had in common. There were a few more RVs scattered randomly across a flat stretch of field, and a couple of kids who couldn't be older than 10 rode their bikes past us. There was an empty pool with a fence around it, and a big closed for maintenance sign that looked to be years old hung across the entrance gate. Most of the land was grass or dirt. Finally, tucked in a corner of the field next to the thick woods,
away from the campground's other cabins and RVs, was a small cluster of tents. As we pulled up, I recognized Mendoza's van and parked a little bit away from it. Since I was going to be sleeping in my truck, I wanted some space. Again, I wondered where Karina would be sleeping, and who was responsible for bringing and putting up the tent she would be in. I was eager for Turner to get out of my truck so I could have a moment alone with Karina. I also wanted to grill her about what she had said to Turner, completely dismissing our relationship while indirectly talking about it. I didn't want to start the weekend arguing with Karina, but I was more than a little salty about it. Brian being considered her last ex drove me fucking crazy. She drove me fucking crazy. Yards away, Mendoza and Gloria were clearly already enjoying the time being kid-free, and that brought an instant smile to my grumpy face. More so for Gloria, who never seemed to get a break. There were a few other soldiers from our platoon, and a few others I didn't recognize were standing around a fire pit, filling coolers with ice and beer, and unloading their cars and trucks with all the essentials. Turner popped out of the truck and left her bags in the back, rushing over to greet everyone. Karina was much slower, gathering her mental composure, I assumed. She sighed and opened the latch on the door. I just sat there, looking down at my half-empty Gatorade bottle and unopened Starburst. When I heard her sneakers hit the ground, I got out of the driver's seat and turned to her. She was typing on her phone screen and then put it in the front pocket of her jeans and adjusted her hair clip as I watched her from behind. I stared at the back of her neck, remembering how it smelled. How the sweat on her skin tasted early in the morning. Why did you tell Turner that Brian was your last ex? Huh? She turned to face me and pushed her arms through the straps of her book bag. It looked too heavy for her, but that wasn't my problem. She wouldn't let me hold it for her if I tried. Anyway, she shrugged her shoulders to move it up farther and let out a grunt. In the car, you said Brian was your last ex-boyfriend. She gave me a look that said a million words, but the loudest one was, "And?" What did you expect me to say? Karina was walking now, slow enough for me to keep up, but she definitely wanted the conversation to end as soon as possible. Well, I thought you would say it was me. I know she works with me, but... Karina's hand shot up to stop me from continuing. I didn't say Brian because of you, or whatever your relationship with her is. I said his name because it's the truth. But what about me? About us? I began to feel deflated, to say the least. The way she was looking at me was like I had just told her that the sky was green instead of blue. Us? We never dated. With that gut punch, she approached the small group gathered around and smiled when Gloria handed her a beer from the cooler. She downed half of it in one gulp. And I kicked my sneaker against a stump of wood. Why the fuck had I agreed to this in the first place?
Chapter 24. Karina. By the time the sun went down, our camping site had become much livelier and more crowded. I worried about who else might be coming. And where the hell were Elodie and my brother? I had agreed to a small trip with the handful of people I'd already met, and had expected to be staying in a tent with Elodie. I'd planned to drive here with my brother and Elodie, but somehow got stuck riding with Kale and Turner, of all people. And my duffel was still in Kale's truck. The ride wasn't as awful as I expected, and Turner was quite funny and kind. Maybe that had a little to do with the fact that she was being much nicer to me than in our previous interactions, and a lot to do with the fact that she didn't flirt with Kale in front of me like I thought she would. My only impressions of her until then were territorial encounters. But maybe that had also been in my head, since I was obsessed with Kale focusing his attention solely on me. That, and Turner's unapologetic confidence that made me realize I was even more insecure about myself than I'd been aware of. The woods around us were thick, tall trees with massive trunks and leaves scattered all over the ground. Outside of our group, there weren't many people here, but I liked that. The sky was beautiful, and the trees felt like a shelter from the real world, like we had gone to another state and not just another county.
I was glad the pool was closed, even though it was too cold to swim anyway. When I looked around, all I could see was tree after tree, and a few picnic tables a short distance from where we'd set up a fire and a grill that Mendoza and Gloria had brought. I was beginning to feel at ease. My anxious and intrusive thoughts were fading, and less frequent. I stopped wondering what would happen if one of the massive trees fell over and crushed our campsite, or if one of the guys got alcohol poisoning and no one could drive him to the hospital. I was finding myself laughing at jokes and breathing slowly, my shoulders falling into a comfortable position as I stared at the crackling fire. Maybe that was because I was sitting next to Gloria on a big uprooted tree trunk. We'd had beer after beer and had now moved on to tequila shots. I was on my second one and she was on her fifth. "See, this isn't so bad, right?" she asked me, touching her little lime-green plastic shot glass to mine. I wasn't sure, but she could hold her liquor like no one I had ever met. I got the feeling that she could read me better than most people, and oddly, it didn't scare me or make me want to hide from her. Gloria's company was so easy, though I barely knew her. She had that kind of personality that made you want to be like her, but not in an envious way. And she didn't make me feel small or out of place. She didn't force me to talk when I had nothing to say, and so far, she had made sure I was never left alone on the log for too long. She hadn't said a word about Kale, except during his brief appearance when she teased him for overcooking the burgers, and rolled her eyes when he threw a bun at her. She picked it up, blew the speckles of dirt off, and took a big bite, making us all laugh. Mendoza came over at least once every 5 minutes or so to kiss her, pet her head, rub his hand down her back. He even kissed her neck once in front of us all, and neither of them cared. I found my face getting hot and wondered how on earth they kept that kind of passion after so many years. My parents barely kissed or hugged, and Estelle and my father absolutely didn't show public affection. I was taken aback by the way I sort of craved it while watching the Mendozas. I thought about Kale walking over and licking his warm tongue against my neck, sucking at the base of my ear while I giggled, and knowing that later when no one was around, it would go even further. How incredibly nice would that be? My ears began to burn, and not from the fire. So I stopped thinking about the ridiculous things I would never have in life. I'd gotten a brief taste of intimacy, and it had blown up in my face, so I shouldn't have been daydreaming about it. Kale had disappeared after he helped Mendoza grill our first round of food, and it seemed like I was the only one who noticed. I scanned the small crowd. Everyone looked slightly different with the orange flames illuminating their faces and bodies. Their voices were louder than before, a direct result of the alcohol. I felt invisible but seen at the same time. The air was getting colder, but I didn't want to seek out Kale, wherever the hell he went. I knew if I just kept drinking, I would get warmer and warmer. Fall had always been my favorite season, so I didn't mind. There were only a few other people outside of our group at the campground. I'd say fewer than 10. Because of this and how vast the woods were, it felt like we had the place to ourselves. I was actually sort of relaxed, which I hadn't felt in a while, but the more relaxed I was, the more my mind drifted to Kale. Where had he run off to? What a coward, coming all the way here just to hide in the woods somewhere. I scanned the wooded area, analyzed where everyone who I did know was, but didn't see Turner. Despite our bonding on the ride here, I really, really, really hoped she wasn't with Kale. All signs pointed to them being alone together somewhere, but I was almost too intoxicated to care. Almost. "Can I have another?" I asked Gloria over the crackling of the fire in front of us. Austin and Elodie finally pulled up in Elodie's small car, the tires crunching over the dirt and sticks as Mendoza threw another log into the fire. Austin got out of the driver's seat and was welcomed by shouting and cheering. Clearly, everyone was happy that the life of the party had arrived. Elodie was met with hugs and exclamations. "Here, sit down," Are you hungry? We already ate, but there are hot dogs, burgers, and sausages over on the table. Are you sure you're not too cold?
Is it okay to camp when you're pregnant?
An already hammered soldier asked. I wondered where they had been all this time, and planned to ask her when we had time to ourselves and the group was distracted with other shenanigans. As Elodie sat down in the folding chair next to my giant log, Austin wrapped a thick, dark green blanket around her shoulders, and she thanked him with a smile. Her presence added to the warmth and comfort I was feeling, thanks to the burn of tequila in my stomach. I recognized most of the faces by now. Nearly all of them had been at my brother's party, which felt like ages ago. As Elodie told me how pretty their drive was, my brother brought her a can of Sprite, and in a shocking turn of events, he turned down the tequila Mendoza offered, saying he didn't feel like drinking. I nearly keeled over. He must have been hungover because he never missed out on the opportunity to drink. Either way, I was glad he wouldn't be, even if it was only for one night.
Really?
Mendoza was as surprised as I was. Austin nodded.
Yeah, really.
He opened his mouth and poured a bubbly can of Coke down his throat like he was chugging a beer.
Whatever. More for us.
Mendoza patted my brother's shoulders and smiled an endearing, caring smile. In my head, I wrongfully assumed Mendoza or the other guys would taunt Austin or pressure him to drink, but not one of them did. Maybe they were all trying, or at least not standing in the way of him attempting to get his body and mind in order before he left for basic. For the first time, the thought of my brother leaving didn't burn my insides. I found myself looking around the group. Nearly all of them had been strangers until recently, but as I listened to the laughter and the shared stories about their lives, the highs and the lows, from the births of their babies to the constant near-death experiences they all shared, I began to feel like I was a part of something, like a chosen family. And thank goodness, my real family had finally showed up. What took you guys so long to get here? Did Austin get you guys lost? I asked Elodie when my brother was out of earshot. Her eyes followed him, and she shook her head. We couldn't find the... She seemed to be struggling with her English.
It doesn't matter.
I interrupted her as she continued to stammer a bit. I'm glad you guys made it, and I'm actually glad you made me come. This brought a huge smile to Elodie's face, and she sat back, relaxed compared to a moment ago. I had to admit that so far I was having fun, but with the whole weekend ahead of us, it was maybe too soon to speak. Nonetheless, looking over at Elodie with the warmth of tequila in my chest made me glad she'd guilted me into tagging along. Your cheeks are red. Aren't you freezing? Elodie nudged my knee with her finger as someone suggested we play hide and seek across the campground. It's the alcohol, I'm okay. I lied. When I was distracted, it had been easy to not focus on how cold it had gotten. But now that she'd asked, I felt the chill all the way from the top of my scalp to the tips of my toes. My anxiety made me deny the smallest, not complicated things in life. Like now, why wouldn't I just say I'm cold? I couldn't bring myself to. Just like I couldn't complain when I got a bad haircut or the nail tech burned my hands with two hot towels. Elodie lifted the corner of her blanket and offered for me to come sit closer to her. But I shook my head, declining. I had to pee, so I would decide how to warm myself up when I got back. I scanned the darkness around us, looking for a wooden structure that resembled a bathroom. I hadn't been paying attention to anyone going, and I'm sure most of the guys used the woods, like soldiers would. Do you know where the bathroom is? I finally asked Gloria. She squinted, and the corner of her eyelash stuck. Ugh, these damn things! She pinched her fingers across the corner of her eye to mold her fake eyelash back down to the black line of eyeliner. I think it's there. She pointed ahead, but I couldn't see anything. Instead of telling her that, I just nodded and thanked her, getting off the log before I peed my pants. I'll be right back, I told Gloria and Elodie. Want me to walk with you? Gloria offered.
Even though it was dark, and I wasn't familiar with the space, I wanted to go alone for some reason. Without wanting to admit it, I knew I was hoping I'd see Kale. If I saw him with Turner, would it hurt worse or help with my attempt at closure? I was a glutton for punishment, apparently, so I stuck my nose in the cold air and walked toward the darkness.
Chapter 25. Kale. Staring into the black of night was one of the most calming sensations for me. I never liked the dark much before deployment, but after seeing the sky light up with rocket after rocket, missile after missile, forming an explosion of never-ending fireworks, I had reached a turning point from being afraid of the dark to desperately longing for a silent, still night of nothing. We were told to get used to it, to put headphones on, but it was fucking idiotic to tell us to put headphones on and cut off our sense of hearing while getting fired on. I'd heard more horror stories about people who'd fallen asleep wearing noise-canceling headphones, only to wake up to the ground shaking and everything burning. Bringing myself back to the woods, I rolled my neck in an attempt to release some of the tension. I shut my eyes, trying to listen for Karina's voice in the distance. Not only was she being extremely quiet, the guys were being loud as hell, drowning out my chance at hearing her. I wanted to join them, but I didn't have it in me to be so close to her in my world. Felt like the more I pulled back from it, the further she got pulled in. I didn't like that. Not one fucking bit. I heard the crunch of sticks near me, and my back straightened. My senses perked up on high alert. Of course. I knew we were just at a campground, not on a mission in the desert, but my body would never fail to go into flight or fight, usually the latter. "Ugh, where's the damn bathroom?" I heard a voice say. It was Karina. I recognized it immediately. "It's so damn cold. I need to get my bag from Kale's truck. Where the hell is he anyway?" she grumbled to herself. I laughed, genuinely amused by her complaints. "What was that?" she questioned the air around her. "Right here," I said, jumping off the back hatch of my truck and landing with my feet on the dirt. "What the hell?" Karina nearly shrieked. She hadn't been expecting me here, which made it funnier. I laughed again, this time louder, and lifted my phone into the air with the flashlight on. "What are you doing out here in the dark? You scared the shit out of me," she said, wrapping her arms around her chest. She must be freezing, in just a long-sleeved shirt and jeans. "I'm just avoiding the crowd. What are you doing out here? Where's your coat?" She stepped closer into the light of my phone flashlight, just close enough that I could see her roll her eyes. "I didn't bring a coat. I didn't bring anything useful, come to think of it," she told me. Her voice sounded slightly slushed, like she was buzzed but not quite drunk. The idea of her being drunk around so many rowdy men made me uneasy, but it wasn't my place to tell her that, and Lord knows if I did, she would surely put me in my place. "Of course you didn't," I whispered to myself, rubbing my hand over my mouth and chin. She was probably too worried about everything and everyone else to pay attention to what she would need. "You brought books, though?" I asked. I could tell when I picked up her bag that she had brought at least two.
"How do you know that?"
"Your bag," she scoffed.
"You went through my bag?"
I shook my head. I leaned back into the bed of my truck and turned on a small overhead light. No, but I carried it. I can tell what's in the bag without going through it, especially if it's something obvious like books. "When were you planning to get reading time in?" I smiled at her.
"They're more of an emotional support thing than thinking I'd be able to read. Plus, I didn't have a clue what to expect. I'd never been on a camping trip that didn't involve my parents fighting or Austin and my dad trying to kill each other."
Ah, there it was. The effortless stream of thoughts that fell from her lips, comforting me even more than the rocketless sky. "This is more of a sleeping party in the woods than camping. Whose tent are you sleeping in?" I asked her, out of curiosity and a bit of worry. I'd loaded her tiny bag into the car, so I knew she didn't bring a tent, and from the anxiety rolling off her right now,
I could read her mind and knew she hadn't thought that through. She looked back toward the campground. The fire was burning bright, voices carrying to us, even a couple hundred feet away. Whatever you do, don't agree to sleep with Mendoza and Gloria. They will fuck with you in there and think they're being quiet. Laughter mixed with surprise filled the air between us. Good to know. Maybe my brother and Elodie brought one. I really, really suck at this. Silence fell between us. You need a coat first before we figure out where you'll sleep. I reached back to open my duffel bag and grabbed my thickest hoodie and a blanket, handing them to her. She stared at me reluctant, but her guard was mostly down. I could tell that I didn't have much longer with her in many ways, but this moment, just the two of us in the darkness, felt so good. I hated the way she had that effect on me, but while I was in the center of it, I loved it. Take them. And don't you have to pee? The bathroom is pitch black, FYI, and I saw Turner go in there with Gunner, the guy who looks like he should be in Hollywood, not the woods in Georgia. I pointed out as she grabbed the hoodie from me and wrapped the blanket around her body. She shivered. I wanted to tell her to come closer, but didn't. I didn't see anyone like that, but what are they? The realization hit her and she smiled. Oh, I'm glad Turner is occupied, she said, surprising both myself and her. You are? I asked, looking into her eyes. She nodded. And why is that? Karina shook her head. That was all I was going to get. But that was fine with me, because I knew exactly what she meant, even if she would never say it. So where should I pee? I'm dying here. I waited way too long and have been drinking. I pointed to the closest spot hidden in the trees. Her mouth fell open. In there? I nodded. But it's dark, like dark, dark. There's no one in there. Plus, I'm right here. I'll keep an eye out. You'll be okay. The fear slipped from her face, and she nodded slowly, considering her options. I knew Gunner and Turner were absolutely fucking in that bathroom, and I knew Karina did not want to see or hear that. Fine. But make sure you don't let anyone come over there. And if I'm not back in 5 minutes, I got eaten by a bear. We both laughed as I assured her that I would avenge her death if a bear ate her. Just call my name if you need help. And here. I handed her a proper flashlight and a roll of paper towel. She put the blanket on the bed of my open truck. Wow, you've come prepared. I agreed. I mean, after years sleeping in the woods, the desert, you name it, I know what to bring. Thank you, Kale. She smiled at me and I felt my chest ache. Maybe she was starting to hate me less? Or was she just in a good mood because of the alcohol and environment? Whatever it was, I would take it. I watched her as she walked past my truck and into the beginning of the line of trees. Be careful, Karina, I called out to her, and she lifted the flashlight below her face and beamed at me again. For the next few minutes, I would pretend that our relationship wasn't destroyed and that she loved me the way I loved her, even if she would never know. Chapter 26. The moment the flashlight came back on, I heard Karina cussing at the sticks and debris breaking under her shoes. She wasn't dressed to go camping, but that was hardly a surprise. She was chronically unprepared. With my back against a thick tree, I waited for her to come out of the woods. Everything good? I asked in a quiet voice, trying not to surprise her as she emerged from the tree-covered darkness. Yeah, I mean, as good as it gets, peeing in the pitch-black woods, she groaned as she stepped closer and approached me. Grabbing onto the blanket that was slipping down, she lifted it up to cover her shoulders. I leaned forward to help her as she tilted her face upward, looking directly into my eyes. I shivered, though my body felt warm. The soft light from the back of my truck cast a shadow across her cheekbones. She didn't look away. She just kept her focus directly on me. I wondered which one of us would look away first. Even the darkness didn't dilute the intensity. It felt like months since I'd had her attention like this, solely fixated on me and only me. She looked like she wanted to say something, and God, I hoped she would. I didn't trust whatever the hell would slip out of my mouth right now. She whispered, a and her tongue dipped down to coat her lips. Her eyes moved to my mouth, and I couldn't stop myself from assuming her mind was going to the same place mine was. The way she tasted, the warmth of her tongue, and the way she kissed. It was always this way with her. She was so tempting without even realizing it. I wanted to kiss her again, to press my lips against hers. I wished I had known that the last time I kissed her would be the last time. There wasn't so much as an inkling of finality then. Now that the strings had been untied and our relationship had